But now, alone in the desolate grays of her bedchamber, she could no longer hide these things from herself. Beyond the concerns she had for the way he had scorned her so coldly in front of everyone was the nagging truth he had done so because he felt betrayed, because he felt wounded by her actions from the night before. And she did not know how to fix it and return to his good graces. She had tried today. Sherzad had wanted to apologize, had wanted to tell him she had not meant to take advantage of the situation. How, in hindsight, it appeared worse than she intended. He must have thought she was in control. Sherzad laughed to herself bitterly as she leaned her forehead against the green silk on her knee. Control? The mere thought was ludicrous. How could he not know as much? And now he was punishing her for it, like an angry boy denied access to a plaything. How dare he? In front of Despina, in front of Jalal, he had embarrassed her, treated her as though she were nothing, as though she merited a silk cord at sunrise. Her throat tightened in memory. Shiva. How dare you! She cried out to the darkness. Two could play at this game. She too could rage at him like a small child deprived of sweets, and then maybe she would not feel quite as miserable and alone as she had all day, as broken, as lost to him as she was. Sherzad pushed to her feet and adjusted the thin chain of gold around her waist. Dangling from its center was a series of emeralds and diamonds that matched the necklace at her throat and the bangles on her left wrist. She shook out her hair and made her way to the low table in the corner. She lifted the lid from the tray and began eating some jewel rice and saffron chicken. In between bites of fresh herbs and cool yogurt, she drank tea and nibbled on pistachio cakes sweetened with honey. Everything was cold, and she chewed from habit rather than enjoyment, but she knew she would regret it later if she went to bed hungry as well as angry. Halfway through her half-hearted meal, the doors to her chambers opened. Sherzad paused, but did not turn around. Instead, she resumed eating. She poured herself another cup of lukewarm tea with a steady hand of feigned indifference. Again, she felt his presence behind her, the same shift in the wind, the same maddening glory. Sherzad tore into a piece of flatbread with vicious precision. Sherzad. She ignored him, despite her heart's sudden clamoring. Khalid strode to the other side of the table and sat down on the cushions with soundless grace. Still, Sherzad did not look up from her tray. She was tearing the piece of flatbread into tiny bits she proceeded to pile in a heap before her. Shazi. Don't. He remained still, awaiting clarification. Don't pretend with me. I'm not pretending, Khalid said quietly. Sherzad threw down the rest of the flatbread and met his gaze with stinging circumspection. His eyes were ringed in deep lines of fatigue. His jaw was set, and his posture was rigid. He doesn't look sorry for hurting me. Something knifed in Sherzad's chest, behind her heart. But he will be. Sherzad, you once lamented the fact that the characters in my stories place so much value on love. Khalid returned her penetrating stare in silence. Why is that? She continued. What is your aversion to the sentiment? His eyes flicked across her face before responding. It's not an aversion, it's merely an observation. That word is used too often for my taste, so I attribute it to things rather than to people. Excuse me? Khalid exhaled carefully. People fall in and out of love with the rising and setting of the sun, rather like a boy who loves the color green one day, only to discover on the morrow that he truly prefers blue. Sherzad laughed, and the sound was lemon to her wound. So you intend to go through life never loving anyone? Just things? No, I'm looking for something more. More than love? Yes, Is it not arrogant to think you deserve more, Khalid ibn al-Rashid? Is it so arrogant to want something that doesn't change with the wind, that doesn't crumble at the first sign of adversity? You want something that doesn't exist, a figment of your imagination. No, I want someone who sees beneath the surface, someone who completes the balance, an equal. And how will you know when you found this elusive someone? Sherazad retorted. I suspect she will be like air, like knowing how to breathe. He regarded her with the stillness of a hawk as he said these words, and Sherazad's throat went dry. Poetry, she whispered, not reality. My mother used to say that a man who can't appreciate poetry lacks a soul. In that respect, I'm inclined to agree. She was referring to my father, he intoned dryly, a soulless man, if ever there was one. I'm told I resemble him greatly. Sherazad studied the tiny mountain of bread before her. I will not feel sorry for you. You do not deserve my pity. Guarding herself against a rising tide of emotion, she looked up again, resolute in her next course of action. I hurt you today. He spoke softly, in a voice of soothing water over scorched steel. It doesn't matter. Her cheeks flushed. It matters to me. Sherazad exhaled in a huff of derision. Then you shouldn't have done it. Yes. Sherazad stared at the cut glass angles of his profile. Even now, his handsome face gave no hint that her pain affected him in any way. The boy of ice and stone, who dashed her heart against a jagged shore, only to walk away without so much as a glance. I will not let him win, for Shiva's sake, for my sake. I will learn the truth, even if I have to destroy him to get it. Are you done? She asked under her breath. He paused. Yes. I have a story for you. A new one? She nodded. Would you like to hear it? Khalid inhaled cautiously, and then leaned an elbow onto the cushions. Sherazad took another sip of cardamom tea and eased back against the pile of vibrant silk on her side. There was once a young girl named Tala. She was the daughter of a wealthy man who lost everything in a slew of poor business decisions, followed by the tragic death of a most beloved wife. Mired in his grief, Tala's father found solace in music and art and could often be found whiling away the hours with a paintbrush in one hand and his favorite santoor in the other. Sherazad brushed a curl of black off her face. At first, Tala tried to understand his need to distract himself from the heartbreak of his losses, but it became increasingly difficult to ignore what it all meant for their family, what it meant for Tala, because even though she loved her father dearly and believed in his goodness with every fiber of her being, she knew that he could not provide for them, that she could not trust him to sustain a life for Tala and her little brother. Khalid's forehead creased at Sherazad's somber expression. So Tala began searching for a husband. She knew she could not hope to make a great match, given her family's unfortunate circumstances. But soon she heard tell of a wealthy merchant in need of a bride. He was older and had been married several times before, but no one was sure what had become of his earlier wives. And this made young women rather wary of making a match with him. Additionally, he had a very long beard of indigo black, so black that in the light it gave off a worrisome tinge of blue. This had afforded him a rather unfortunate moniker. He was known as Merdad the Bluebearded. Sherazad sat up and removed her emerald necklace, placing it alongside the silver pot of tea. Khalid observed her in silence. Even with these reservations, Tala set about arranging the match with Merdad. She was 16 and rather pretty. intelligent and vivacious. Merdad was pleased, even though she had little to offer besides herself. Her only stipulation was that he care for her family. He agreed without hesitation, and they were promptly married. She left her home and moved into his impressive walled residence on the other side of the city. At first, everything seemed normal, perhaps even ideal. Merdad was respectful and felicitous as a husband, and he appeared quite content with Tala. He gave her ready access to the many rooms in his home and showered her with gifts of new clothes and jewelry, perfume and art, beautiful things Tala had only dreamed of seeing, let alone owning. Sherazad locked eyes with Khalid, clenching her hands in the fine silk of her trousers. After a time, Merdad made plans to travel for his work. He handed Tala a ring of keys to their home and bade her take charge of the residence in his absence. He entrusted her with the daily tasks and gave her free access to all that was his, save one thing and one thing alone. On the ring of keys, he designated the smallest and held it before her. He told her it was the key to a locked room in the cellar, and barred her from entering that room for any reason. He made her swear, on pain of death, that she would obey this directive. Tala promised she would not go near this room, and after she made it clear she understood the gravity of the situation, Merdad handed her the keys and took leave, promising to return in 1 month. Sherazad drained the remnants of the cold tea from the bottom of the etched glass cup. The dregs were oversweet, mixed with the last of the rock sugar. It swirled in her mouth, the grit of bitter cardamom and crystallized metal. Her hand trembled with nerves as she set down the tiny cup. For a time, Tala relished this opportunity to have free reign over such a magnificent home. The servants treated her with deference, and she hosted friends and family members for wonderful meals prepared with a delicate hand, served under a starry sky. Each room of her husband's home enchanted her. In his travels, he had amassed things of beauty and wonder that brought her imagination to new worlds. And yet, with each passing day, that room in the cellar began to gnaw at her, plague her, call to her. Khalid shifted forward in his seat, his features tightening. One day, against her better judgment, she strode by it. She swore she heard a voice inside crying out. She tried to ignore it, but it cried out again, "Tala!" Tala's heart pounded. She reached for the ring of keys in a panic. Then she remembered Merdad's directive and fled up the stairs. That night, she could not sleep. The next day, Tala went back down to the cellar. Again she heard a voice beseeching her from within that room. "Tala," it cried, "please." This time she knew, beyond the shadow of a doubt, it was the voice of a young girl. Tala could not ignore it. She fumbled for the ring of keys at her waist. They fell once to the stone floor at her feet. When she finally managed to select the right key, her fingers shook so badly she struggled to fit it into the lock. Sherazad swallowed, her throat parched. Khalid watched her closely, every muscle strained with heightened awareness. "Your husband is not a forgiving man." Her pulse thundered, but Sherazad forged ahead, unwavering. "You will not treat me like this. You will not dash my heart against a shore and walk away." The tumblers clicked with a sound that made Tala jump in her skin, and she stepped forward into utter darkness. The first thing she noticed was the smell, iron and old metal, like a rusted sword. The cellar was warm and humid. Then her foot slid in something, and a rush of rot and decay sailed back at her. "Sherazad," Khalid warned in a low tone. Sherazad barreled forward, heedless. When Tala's eyes adjusted to the darkness and she looked down, she saw her foot was caked in blood. Hanging around her were bodies. The bodies of young women. They were Merdad's. Sherzad! Sherzad's heartbeat resounded in her ears as Khalid shot to his feet, his face a mask of anguished fury. He towered over her, his chest heaving. Then he turned to the door. No! Sherzad raced behind Khalid, struggling to keep up with his powerful gait. As he reached for the handle, she launched herself at him, wrapping her arms around his waist. Please! She cried. He did not respond. She pressed her face into his back, and the tears began to flow, embarrassing and unbidden. Give me the key, she gasped. Let me see behind the door. You are not Merdad. Show me. When he put his hands on her wrists to free himself, she merely clasped tighter, refusing to let go. Give me the key, Khalid John, her voice broke. She felt his body tense at the term of endearment. Then, after an endless moment of racked silence, Khalid exhaled, and his shoulders sagged in defeat. Sherzad laced her fingers to his chest. You hurt me last night, Sherzad, he said quietly. I know. A great deal. She nodded against the linen of his chemise. Yet you have said nothing about it, he continued. I wanted to, I meant to, but then you were so hateful. There is a vast difference between meaning to do something and actually doing it. She nodded again. He sighed and swiveled in her arms to look at her. You're right. I was hateful to you. He raised his palms to her face and wiped away her tears. I'm sorry I hurt you, Sherzad said, her eyes luminous. Khalid slid a hand behind her neck and rested his chin atop her head. As am I, Junam, he whispered. So very sorry. The die is cast. Jahandar stood beneath the shade of the marbled vestibule at Talakhan, with his thumbs looped through his wrinkled tikka sash. He watched Rahim al-Din Walad dismount from his gleaming akal teki and nod at several laborers carrying bushels of grain toward the kitchens. The workers returned smiles and exchanged a few pleasantries with the young nobleman before parting ways. As soon as Rahim turned to walk in his direction, Jahandar scrambled from behind the polished stone pillar and into Rahim's path. Rahim John, Jahandar cleared his throat with a cough and a gasp. Rahim took a startled step back. Jahandar Effendi, it's good to see you. Is it? Jahandar offered him a mangled attempt at a grin. Thank you for not saying what you must be thinking about me. Rahim forced his mouth into a patient half-smile. This cannot be easy for you. It is not, but I am doing much better now. Rahim nodded. I'm glad to hear it, and I'm sure Irsa will be happy as well. Jahandar cleared his throat again, looking away. Rahim's eyes cast a sudden chill of judgment. Since you arrived from Ray, Irsa has spent most days in the far corner by the fountain, painting or reading from a book. I believe it's one you gave her. Of course, the book on tea, Jahandar remarked absent-mindedly. Rahim bowed his head in a curt gesture. When he began striding down the vestibule once more, Jahandar held up his palms to stall him. Why are your hands burned? Rahim asked with alarm, glancing at Jahandar's blistered fingers. Jahandar shook his head, flicking away Rahim's distress like a bothersome gnat. I mishandled a lamp while I was translating a text. Don't worry yourself, Rahim John. I already prepared a salve in my room. Rahim frowned. Please be careful, Jahandar Effendi. Shazi will rail at me if something happens to you while you're here at Talakhan. And if Sherzad is unhappy, Tariq will be furious. dealing with hellions of their ilk falls rather low on my list of things to enjoy, like scorpions and quicksand. Jahandar sighed piteously, scuffing his feet. You must find me quite pathetic as a father, do you not? You love your children, that is obvious, but I cannot speak to what it means to be a good father. You've always been so good, Rahim John. Such a wonderful friend to Tariq and to my Sherzad. Jahandar studied Rahim in an unusually intense manner. Rahim's features stiffened, discomfort settling between the lines. Thank you. An awkward silence fell between the two men, and Jahandar knew it was time to take action. For a new kind of test was at hand. The kind he had always dreaded, ever since he was a boy. So he forced back the needling part of him that wanted to shuffle away to the safety of the shadows. Those last remaining traces that babbled from lofty corners reminded him he was not a fighter. Just an old man with a book. Jahandar's jaw squared under his wispy beard. I know I have very little right to ask anything of anyone, Rahim al-Din Walad. But as a father, I have no choice. Rahim waited, drawing in a careful breath. I know Tariq left Talakan because of Sherzad, Jahandar continued. There is no way for me to know what he has planned, but I will not sit in a darkened room while others take charge of rescuing my child. I did not do, as a father should have, at the onset. I did not stop her. But whatever needs to be done now, trust that I will do it. I cannot fight as you can. I am not fearless and strong. I am not Tariq, but I am Sherzad's father, and I would do anything for her. Please do not dismiss me. Please allow me to be part of your plans. Find a place for me in them. Rahim listened to Jahandar with quiet consideration. I'm sorry, but this is not my decision to make, Jahandar Effendi. I understand. But I will take you to see Tariq when the time comes. Jahandar nodded, a peculiar martial light entering his gaze. Thank you. Thank you, Rahim John. Now Rahim's smile was genuine. He put a hand on Jahandar's shoulder. Then he bowed his head and lifted his fingertips to his brow. Jahandar remained in the archway of the vestibule, pleased by his success. The passing of this test. He looked down at his palms, the newest blisters formed over the scars of the last, and they smarted at the slightest touch, seared with the promise of pain to come. His skin was hard and crusted beneath his nails, and he could no longer sacrifice the sleeves of his remaining garments to this endeavor. It was time. Jahandar stared across the courtyard at the entrance to the kitchens. A mere hair would not do, not this time. He needed more, always more. The Falcon and the Tiger. Sherzad stood at the marble railing of her balcony, overlooking the pools of water below. A midday sun reflected back in their glistening surfaces, rippling with each passing breeze. But this was not of particular interest to Sherzad. The arriving guests were far more fascinating. It was a veritable menagerie of the absurd. One nervous-looking young man entered the courtyard with a bevy of attendants, each waiting to remove a particular article of his clothing. First one leather mankala, then another, then his rida, then his boots, which were quickly replaced by a pair of pristine sandals. Each of the servants stashed away the garments in methodical order before the young man ventured a single step from his steed. Another man, the size of three men put together, swayed atop an elephant, sporting hooked tusks, its gray trunk trailing across the gritty granite pavestones below. This man had an oiled mustache with ends that twitched at the slightest movement, and each of his fingers displayed immense rings of a different gemstone, glittering with abandon in the rays of the sun. Sherzad rested her chin in her palm and stifled a giggle. Another nobleman galloped through the entrance on a creature Scheherazade had never seen before. It resembled a horse in size and build, yet its coat was covered in the strangest pattern of black and white stripes. The animal stomped its hooves and snorted, flinging its neck to and fro. As soon as Scheherazade saw it, she gasped and called Despina to her side. Despina shook her head as she stood next to Scheherazade. "You really shouldn't be out here." "Why not?" Scheherazade waved a flippant hand. "It's perfectly safe. All weapons are surrendered at the palace gate." "I wish I could make you understand. You're not a girl on a lark, watching an amusing display. You're their queen." "They came here because of that wretched sultan from Parthia, not because of me." Scheherazade leaned farther over the railing. "Despina, did you see that imbecile on the camel? The one with the brass bells and the finger in his nose?" Despina's eyes clouded over, and Scheherazade ignored the lines creasing her handmaiden's forehead. Ignored them because she needed a light-hearted moment. Needed it enough to appear foolish, just for an instant, so she would not have to deal with the reality of her life in a palace of polished marble, with flashing gems at her throat and a shimmering pool of water at her feet. In a marriage rife with growing tension, with a husband who would not touch her, nor venture near her, much less share his secrets. Scheherazade clenched her teeth. Ever since that night 2 weeks ago, when she'd told the tale of Tala and Merdad, Khalid had come to have dinner with her each evening and hear a new story. He would listen at a distance, engage her in stilted conversation, and share pithy observations he'd made throughout the day. Then he would depart, and she would not see him until the following night. "Your husband is not a forgiving man." Scheherazade gripped the stone railing in both hands, the blood leeching from her fingertips. "Who are all these fools anyway?" She tried to smile at Despina. Despina's lips puckered into a moo. "Most of them are the Caliph's bannermen. A general invitation was issued to every emir of Khorasan." A bubble of air caught at the top of Scheherazade's throat. She twisted away from the railing to look at her handmaiden. "What?" she whispered. Despina canted her head to one side. "I told you. You never listen. This gathering is not just for the Sultan of Parthia. The Caliph wants to introduce you as his queen. He invited every nobleman in the kingdom to share in the spectacle, to meet you." A knot of panic started to gather in the pit of Scheherazade's stomach. "Tariq wouldn't. He may be a nobleman, but he's not an emir. Not yet. He wouldn't dare." Despina's ongoing lecture dissolved into a muted din in Scheherazade's ears, until a familiar screaming cry echoed from above. Scheherazade balled her hands into fists and spun back to the railing, pleading to the heavens that, "No." Clattering across the granite pavestones on a dark bay Al-Khamsa was her first love, Tariq Imran Al-Ziyad. "My, my, my," Despina breathed. Had Tariq not reined in his stallion at that moment and whistled to the skies, he still would have drawn attention. Even dust-worn and bedraggled, he cut an imposing figure, broad-shouldered, with skin of the desert and eyes of silver and ash. He was the kind of boy who turned heads and never noticed. The faint shadow of hair that darkened his jaw served only to accentuate features hewn from stone by the hand of a master sculptor. When Zoraya came plummeting from the clouds to land on his outstretched Mankala, Tariq glanced up and saw Scheherazade. His look was a touch. Scheherazade's heart began to pound, the fear rising, taking hold. But it was nothing compared to the panic that gripped her, that screamed a soundless scream at the scene unfolding before her. When Khalid rode into the courtyard atop a black Arabian, a stone's throw from her first love. Scheherazade had disappeared from the balcony. It was just as well. For as much as Tariq wanted to drink in the sight of her, now was not the time for distraction. even one as welcome as she. His target had arrived. Khalid ibn al-Rashid, murderer of Shiva, husband of Shahrzad. Tariq gripped the reins in his free hand. The monster rode past Tariq on a magnificent black Arabian. His dark rida billowed in his wake. A visceral hatred coiled in Tariq's chest. When the monster stopped in the middle of the courtyard and pulled back the hood of his cloak, Tariq's wrath flowed to his fists, and he envisioned them smashing against the monster's chilly regalness until nothing remained but blood and bits of bone. To the right of the monster was a young man with an arrogant grin, curly brown hair, and a cuirass with the standard of the Royal Guard embossed on its breastplate. To his left was an older man with a golden griffin stitched on his cloak, signifying his status as the Sharban of Ray. As the noise in the courtyard died down, the monster began to speak. "Welcome to Ray." His voice was surprisingly unassuming. "I trust your journeys were safe and uneventful. It is an honor to host you on this occasion, and I thank you for always striving to embody, in all the days past, present, and future, the greatness of Khorasan to those who would take notice." A polite cheer rose from the edges of the courtyard. "Again, I welcome you to my home. I have the fervent hope that when you leave it, you will have come to care for it as much as I do. It is the city of my childhood." The monster paused. "And the city of my queen." At this, the chorus of approval grew, mingled with a clear tenor of curiosity. The arrogant boy to the monster's right smirked appreciatively, while the Sharban sighed with seeming resignation. It took all Tariq's willpower to look away and not draw undue attention. The hate was too palpable. It roiled off him in murderous waves. Death was too easy for this monster. He dared to flaunt Shahrzad as if she were a prize he had won. Zoraya flapped her wings from her perch on his Mankala, aware of his fury. Tariq raised a hand to soothe her while he observed the monster exiting the courtyard, his gold-clad retinue clamoring in his shadow. Tariq was not impressed by the show. Rahim was a far better rider. The Caliph of Khorasan was an above-average horseman at best. For all his dour black and stern expressions, all the whispered rumors of trick swords and cold brutality, he did not appear worthy of genuine fear. He appeared bored with life, bored and in need of a nap. Tariq sneered to himself, his loathing mingled with a newfound distaste. Monster? Hardly. Merely a boy king. And a dead one at that. Two Crossed Swords. Another moment of this, and Shahrzad would scream. Sitting here, idling about in her room, while somewhere in the palace, a reckless boy with a falcon and a quick-tempered king with two swords. "Hold still," Despina commanded. She clutched Shahrzad's chin in her left hand. Then she lifted the tiny three-haired brush to Shahrzad's eyelid once more. Shahrzad gritted her teeth. "You are an utter nightmare," Despina grumbled. When she was finished, she pulled back and nodded with satisfaction at her work. "Can I leave now?" Shahrzad blew a lock of glossy black hair out of her face. "Such a brat! Would you at least do me the courtesy of feigning a dram of appreciation for all my efforts?" Despina grabbed Shahrzad's wrist and hauled her before the mirror in the far corner of the chamber. "Despina, I'm going to be late for..." "Just have a look, Shahrzad al-Khaizuran." When Shahrzad glanced into the polished silver, her hazel eyes nearly doubled in size. Nothing about her appearance seemed normal. Despina had turned tradition on itself. She had dressed Shahrzad in sirwal trousers of luminous black silk, with a matching fitted top, and chosen to eschew the typical mantle of muted gold or silver. Tonight, Shahrzad's sleeveless mantle was the same cerulean blue as Despina's eyes. It matched the glittering sapphires swinging from her earlobes. Instead of placing a band of stones across Sherzad's brow, Despina had woven tiny strands of obsidian beads throughout her hair. They caught at wayward beams of light, making each curl flash like shadow incarnate. For the final touch, Despina had painted a thick line of black kohl above the top portion of Sherzad's eyelashes. She had flicked the lines far past each outer corner, giving the illusion of cat's eyes. The entire effect was arresting, to say the least. "No necklace?" Sherzad stuttered. "No, you don't like them, or you do a good job of pretending you don't." "My arms are bare." "Yes." Sherzad ran her fingers across the shining blue fabric of her mantle. Black diamond bangles clinked together on her left wrist. "Tonight is a night to turn heads. Make them remember you. Make sure they never forget. You are the Khalifa of Khorasan, and you have the ear of a king." Despina put her hand on Sherzad's shoulder and grinned at their shared reflection. "More important, you have his heart." She bent forward and lowered her voice. "And most important, you are a fearsome thing to behold in your own right." Sherzad smiled, but it came from a place of unexpected despondency. "For once, you're wrong about several things." She reached up and clasped Despina's hand. "Thank you. I'm sorry I was so distracted on the balcony earlier. I didn't realize the importance of the gathering until that moment. It's not an excuse for being so wretched all afternoon, but..." Despina laughed, and it was a balm to Sherzad's nerves. "I'm used to it. Just handle yourself with aplomb tonight, and all is forgiven." Sherzad nodded and walked to the door of her chamber. The Rajput was waiting beyond the threshold to escort her through the vaulted marble corridors. When he looked down at her, his moonless eyes constricted for an instant, and she thought she saw something resembling amity in their depths. Then he directed her down the labyrinthine hallways. As they rounded the final corner, Sherzad paused mid-step. Khalid stood before a set of massive, gilt-framed double doors, three times his height. They were guarded on either side by creatures carved from stone, with the body of a bull, the wings of an eagle, and the head of a man. He turned when he heard their footsteps, and Sherzad's breath was gone before she could catch it. The linen of his off-white chemise was so finely spun that it reflected a faint sheen from the torches lining the corridor. Their fires gave life to the carved hollows of his features. The hilt of his sword was looped through the crimson tikka sash wound across his hips. His mantle was a rich brown that enhanced the amber of his eyes, making them appear even more intense, even more fluid, even more illusory. And these eyes were hers. From the moment he turned and saw her, Sherzad slowed her pace as she neared him, her fear fading into a strange sort of calm. She attempted a smile. He reached out his hand. When she took it, she noticed a thick band of muted gold on the third finger of his right hand. Embossed on its surface were two crossed swords. Sherzad ran her thumb over it. "It's my standard," Khalid explained. "They're twin shamshirs." "Yes." She looked up, worried he would wonder how she knew, but he was unfazed. "The general told you I saw the tournament?" she asked flatly. "Of course." A corner of his lips twitched. Sherzad exhaled in a huff. "Of course." He laced his fingers through hers. "You look beautiful." "So do you." "Are you ready?" "Are you?" At this, Khalid smiled. He raised her hand to his lips and kissed it. "Thank you, Shazi, for standing at my side." She nodded, words failing her. Then Khalid strode forward and the Rajput pushed open one of the huge doors. The warmth of Khalid's hand led Shahrazad onto the upper landing of an immense two-way staircase shaped like open arms. For an instant, she hesitated, thinking they were supposed to go their separate ways. But Khalid grasped her palm tight and started down the stairs with Shahrazad beside him. Over her shoulder, she caught a glimpse of blue damask, trailing behind her like gently rolling waves across the sea of hewn marble. When they paused at the base of the staircase, Shahrazad gasped in wonder for the second time that evening. The royal audience hall of the palace at Rey was undoubtedly the largest room she had ever seen in her life. The floor was immense, alternating stones of black and white patterned diagonally as far as the eye could see. Beautiful reliefs depicting human bulls charging into battle and winged women with long tresses flowing in the wind adorned the walls, which stretched high into the air. So high that Shahrazad had to lengthen her neck to see the very tops of the carved columns bearing the ponderous weight of the ceiling. Fashioned near the base of each of these columns were two-headed lions with iron torches protruding from their roaring mouths. In the center of this vast space was a three-sided raised dais with a series of low tables situated upon its surface. Sumptuous fabric and richly appointed cushions littered the dais with vibrant color and lush texture. Fresh rose petals and dried jessamine were strewn across the silk and fringed damask, perfuming the air with a sweetly intoxicating scent that beckoned to anyone who wandered by. Their guests were milling about, awaiting their arrival. Tariq. The fear returned in a rush. She could sense Khalid watching her. He squeezed her hand, offering his gentle reassurance in one simple gesture. Shahrazad glanced back at him with a wavering smile.
"If it pleases our esteemed guests,"
a sonorous voice echoed from above. Every head in the room swiveled their way.
"The Caliph of Khorasan, Khalid ibn al-Rashid, and the Khalifa of Khorasan, Shahrazad al-Khaizuran."
All eyes turned toward her, bodies twisting, necks craning for a better vantage point. From the edge of her gaze, she finally saw a pair of silver eyes flash to her face, glide over her resplendent form, then back to her hand, still interwoven in Khalid's steady warmth. Then the silver eyes vanished into the crowd, leaving behind panic.
"Please, not here. Do nothing. Say nothing."
She briefly recalled the skirmish in the souk a few weeks ago, the drunken men with their piecemeal arms, and the cloaked caliph with his deadly shamshir.
"If you threaten Khalid, he'll kill you, Tariq, without a second thought."
Khalid strode onto the dais and took his place before the center stretch of tables. Shahrazad released his palm and sat to his right, her mind a jumbled mass of thoughts.
"I can't look for Tariq. I can't do anything. It will only make matters worse. What could he be planning?"
"Is this seat available?"
Jalal grinned down at Shahrazad. She looked up, blinking hard.
"That depends. Is it for you?"
He sat down next to her.
"I did not give you per—"
"Good evening, Saidi," Jalal said in a loud tone.
Shahrazad wrinkled her nose at Jalal.
"Don't do that, my lady. You ruin your face when you do that," he teased.
"Good evening, Jalal, and I disagree,"
Khalid retorted under his breath. Jalal laughed heartily. "My apologies, then. If you would permit me this indulgence in its place, Saidi, I do believe every man here is currently reassessing his notion of beauty."
Despina was right. He is such a consummate flirt.
"Stop it," Shahrazad flushed, glaring at Jalal's arrogant mien.
"Now that ruins nothing," Jalal said. "At last we agree on something,"
Khalid spoke to Jalal, though his eyes lingered on Shahrazad. And Jalal leaned back into the cushions with a satisfied smile, his hands laced across his stomach.
"If it pleases our esteemed guests," the announcer intoned once more.
Again, all heads turned to the set of open-armed staircases.
The Sultan of Parthia, Salim Ali el-Sharif.
When Jalal rose to his feet with a grumbled oath, Shahrzad placed her palms on the dais to follow suit. But Khalid immediately reached his hand out to stop her. Shahrzad met his gaze, and he shook his head very slightly, his eyes narrowing at the edges. His thumb trailed along the underside of her forearm, and the knot in her stomach pulled tight. Then he let go, his features blank once more. As the sea of faces parted before them, Shahrzad took her first glimpse of the man who wished to lord over Khalid with accusations of illegitimacy. The uncle who had treated Khalid's mother with such disdain. The sultan who would do anything for the chance to gain a kingdom. Salim Ali al-Sharif was an attractive man with a strong jaw, nicely graying hair, and a meticulous mustache. He was trim and appeared in good health, with a deceptively warm set of dark brown eyes. His charcoal-colored mantle was exquisitely embroidered at its collar and hem, and the scimitar at his hip had a burnished hilt of solid gold with an emerald the size of a child's fist embedded in its base. He strode onto the dais with the confidence of a man absent worry and took a seat in the empty space by Khalid. At Salim's arrival, the rest of the guests began filtering to the tables. Shahrzad finally dared to run her eyes across the room and was distressed to discover that Tariq was seated quite close, well within earshot. When their glances met, his handsome face eased into perilous familiarity, awash in the memory of stolen embraces, and Shahrzad immediately looked away.
"Stop it. Please don't do this, Tariq. If Khalid sees you looking at me, you don't understand. He notices everything, and you are risking your life."
"Khalid John," the Sultan of Parthia began in a spuriously pleasant voice, putting his wolfish white teeth on full display. "Are you not going to introduce me to your new wife?" As Salim spoke, the Sharban sat down next to him, shielded by his usual armor of circumspection. Khalid's piercing gaze turned to Salim, then he smiled slowly, with such patent falseness that its chill blew back like an icy gale on a mountaintop.
"Of course, Uncle Salim. It would be a privilege to introduce you."
Khalid shifted to one side.
"Shahrzad, this is my uncle by marriage, Salim Ali al-Sharif.
Uncle Salim, this is my wife, Shahrzad." Salim regarded her with an eager friendliness Shahrzad found disarming. He beamed at her with no small amount of charisma.
"It's a pleasure to meet you, my lord."
Shahrzad offered him a ready smile. She bowed her head and touched her fingertips to her brow.
"By all that is holy, Khalid John, she is a vision."
Though Salim looked at her, he addressed Khalid, treating Shahrzad as little more than a tapestry hanging on his nephew's wall. It rankled her. Shahrzad held firm to her smile.
"A vision with eyes and ears, my lord."
Khalid continued staring ahead, but the ice set around his features thawed at her retort. Salim's eyes widened, and something flared for an instant in their pools of contrived warmth. He laughed, and the sound was just as charming as his voice, just as overdone. "Stunning and silver-tongued. What an interesting combination. I can see I will have quite a time getting to know you, my lady Shahrzad."
"Quite a time," Shahrzad agreed. "I look forward to it, my lord."
Though his smile wavered for less than an instant, there was no mistaking it. She was irritating him.
"As do I," he replied. Each word was like a spear soaked in sweet water.
"If it pleases our esteemed guests," the announcer boomed from above, "dinner is served." Two rows of servants descended the open-armed staircases
bearing steaming trays above their heads. They marched in unison until they arrived before the dais, setting plates of food in front of each guest. Aromatic rice with fresh dill and split fava beans, lamb simmered in a sauce of turmeric and caramelized onions, skewers of chicken and roasted tomatoes, fresh vegetables garnished with mint and chopped parsley, olives marinated in fine oil, lavash bread with rounds of goat cheese and seemingly endless sweet preserves. Scheherazade had never seen so much food. The air filled with the aroma of spices and the clamor of conversation. Scheherazade began with some lavash bread and quince chutney, which had quickly become a favorite of hers since she arrived at the palace. As she ate, she chanced another perusal of the room. Tariq was speaking with an older gentleman seated to his left. When he felt her eyes on him, Tariq turned his head, and Scheherazade was forced yet again to look away. Khalid poured himself a cup of wine and eased back onto the cushions, leaving his plate of food untouched. "Have you no appetite, nephew?" Salim raised an eyebrow at Khalid. "Perhaps it has mysteriously disappeared. That can happen when one is troubled." Khalid ignored Salim's attempt to bait him, choosing instead to take a sip of wine. "Or, is it possible you are concerned your food seeks to lash out at you in response to some inexplicable offense?" Salim laughed at his own joke, winking at Scheherazade. "Hateful man." Scheherazade reached over and snared an olive from Khalid's plate. Holding Salim's gaze, she popped the olive in her mouth and ate it. "His food seems fine to me, my lord." "I'm not certain which inexplicable offense you might be referencing, but rest assured, his food is quite safe." Scheherazade replied with a wink of her own. "Would you like me to taste your food as well, uncle?" At that, Jalal began barking with laughter, and even the Sharban was forced to lower his grizzled chin. The suggestion of a smile tugged at Khalid's lips. Across the way, a cup was set down on the table with unwarranted vehemence. "Please, Tariq, don't make a scene. Don't do anything." Salim grinned at Scheherazade. "Truly silver-tongued, my lady Scheherazade. I'd ask where you found her, Khalid John, but..." Khalid's right hand clenched, and Scheherazade held back the desire to stab Salim in the eye with a utensil. "Why would you be curious as to where he found me, my lord? Are you in the market?" Scheherazade asked in a nonchalant manner. Salim's brown eyes glittered. "Perhaps I should be. Have you any relatives, my lady? Maybe a sister?" "He knows I have a sister. Is he threatening my family?" Scheherazade tilted her head to one side, tamping down a flare of concern. "I do have a sister, my lord." Salim propped his elbows onto the table, studying Scheherazade with an amused yet predatory gleam. Khalid's full attention was fixed on the Sultan of Parthia, and a taut band of muscle flexed in his forearm. His hand shifted in Scheherazade's direction. Conversation around them had all but ceased in recognition of the growing tension in the air. "Am I not dangerous enough, Scheherazade?" Salim asked in a chillingly thoughtful tone. "Perhaps too forgiving of the women in my past. Too willing to let them live." Several gasps emanated from around them, rippling across the hall like a rumor being passed through a square. Jalal released a pent-up breath, followed by a low oath that garnered a look of warning from his father. Scheherazade swallowed her fury and then smiled with the brightness of the sun. "No, Uncle Salim, you are simply too old." The room was as silent as a tomb. And then the huge man, with the collection of rings on his fingers, began to laugh, his oiled mustache twitching all the while, followed by the nobleman who had arrived on the black and white striped steed. Soon others started to join in until a chorus of amusement echoed throughout the space. Salim's robust laughter rose above the rest. Only those closest to him saw the venomous gaze he shot at the young Khalifa of Khorasan. Only those who knew him well understood he was beyond enraged by the recent turn of events. And only those watching very carefully saw the Khalifa of Khorasan lean back against the cushions and toy with the bangles on his wife's arm. The boy with the silver eyes was one of them. A dance on a balcony. As the meal drew to a close, an assemblage of musicians gathered in the corner by the raised dais. A heavily bearded man, with a comanche, slid the hair of his bow across his instrument, checking to see if it was in tune by tightening its ivory pegs, while a young woman adjusted the reed of her ney one last time. An elderly man settled the base of his tombak against his left hip and struck the drum's taut surface. Slow, then quick, quick, he began pounding out a driving rhythm, and the dulcimer melody of the centaur joined in before all four musicians were lost to their music, lost to the beat. Then, from the opposite side of the dais, a young girl appeared. A collective murmuring arose from the tables, a communal sigh of disbelief. Jalal groaned. Khalid looked away, for she was undoubtedly the most beautiful girl Sherazad had ever beheld. She was dressed in a fitted top of fiery red silk that left little to the imagination, and a matching flowing skirt with intricate embroidery along the hem. Her hair fell past her waist in spiraling curls of mahogany, with hints of auburn set aflame by the torchlight. Her face would have brought a painter to his knees. High cheekbones, flawless skin, arched brows, and a fringe of black lashes that fanned over obscenely large eyes. Of course, the girl began to dance. She moved like a snake, writhing across the black and white stones to the rising strains of the music. The curves of her body seemed inspired by the moon itself. Her hands and hips beckoned, beseeched, befuddled. She twisted and swayed in a manner that was altogether otherworldly, altogether unfair. As the girl made her mesmeric way to the center of the tables, Sherazad tensed in awareness. She's dancing for Khalid. It was obvious. The girl's eyes were locked on the Caliph of Khorasan, her dark irises a host of the forbidden. With each slow spin, her rich mane of hair coiled about her shoulders, and the gems at her stomach flashed in wild abandon. When she smiled at Khalid, as though they shared a lifetime of secrets, an ugly series of images flickered through Sherazad's mind, most of them beginning and ending with mahogany curls being torn by their roots from the beautiful girl's head. How could I be so childish? She's just dancing. It doesn't matter. None of this matters. Sherazad took a deep breath and averted her gaze. When Jalal started to laugh, she glowered at him, the heat rising in her neck. The brazen girl ended the dance a stone's throw from the dais, her hands positioned above her head, and her endless curls thrown into an alluring mass over one shoulder. Wonderful. Now go home. Instead, the girl sashayed toward them, her slender hips continuing to sway, even without music. She stopped right in front of Sherazad. Then she grinned. "Hello, Khalid," she said in a voice of silken sin. Khalid exhaled carefully before lifting his tiger eyes. "Hello, Yasmin." Irritated would not be an apt word. Distressed? No, that wouldn't be quite right either. Furious? Sherazad shook her head and smiled at the chattering nobleman before her, struggling to clear her mind so she could focus on their conversation. Yasmin el-Sharif, the daughter of that hateful man.
As soon as Sherazad had learned the beautiful girl's identity, from Jalal no less, she had smiled patiently through their formal introduction. Through the painfully obvious, lifelong connection between Khalid and the otherworldly princess of Parthia,